Hey everybody, this is Adam Gamwell here for This Anthropological Life, coming to you from Peru. You may have noticed that was a strange noise that we just heard, but today we're talking about mate, the tea. And so this is, you know, you may hear some interesting sound effects during today's show. I've been hoping for a while to be able to do some episodes here in Peru in the field, but as you can imagine, it's really quite busy, and so as luck would have it, I've been working with a friend of mine for the past month and a half on a separate project regarding quinoa conservation. More on that for another episode. But for now, so my friend is Guillermo Hayden. He's an agricultural engineering student from Rio Grande do Sul in southern Brazil. One of the things that he brought with him and brought into my life is the culture of drinking mate. Subsequently, after we met, I also found out that he's the head of Circle of Drink Brazil, which is the world's largest online mate drinking community, which is pretty cool. And after a month and a half of working with Guilherme, I can say that I, too, am hooked on mate. So one of the fun parts about this episode today is that I'm a U.S. citizen, he's a Brazilian citizen, we're working together in Peru, and we're talking about mate. Now, you know, on TAL, we've done episodes before on coffee, on beer, amongst other foods. So I thought this would be a great continuation of our exploration of food and drink cultures on This Anthropological Life. Now, briefly, mate is tea. In regions where it's drunk, which now is all around the world, but, you know, we'll get into some of the history predominantly in regions of Brazil, Uruguay, Paraguay, Argentina, mate is culturally significant. It's as culturally significant as black tea is to Scotland, or as coffee is to Italians, or as wine is to France, or as we might also say as beer is to the United States people. It's not just a beverage. Really, mate is this social and cultural unifier. It's this identifier that can move cross-national, cross-linguistic borders and create something that we want to explore today called the culture of mate. And what is that? So, Guillermo, thank you so much for joining me on today for a conversation. I'm really excited to be here. And so why don't we get started first by you telling us a bit about yourself?
Well, I have to say that I'm thrilled by that, but... Hello, everybody. It's great to be here sharing a bit of my story and my culture with you, the Gaucho's culture. First of all, of course, a special hello to my Brazilian friends, to my university, my fellows from Federal University of Pelotas, to my people in the Circle of Drink, as Adam has already mentioned, the biggest mate circle in the world, brought to us by Dave Mate, who loves mate just like me and now just like us. And, well, it is a pleasure to be here talking and also drinking mate with you during this conversation. And I have to say that I really loved your first podcast about the World Cup in Brazil, so that made me really excited to be here sharing a bit more about my country. And, you know, getting to explore it through your interesting anthropological viewpoint of the world. So thanks, Adam, for having me here. It's great.
Thank you. And that's really nice of you to say. Why don't we dive in a bit more? Tell me a bit more. How did you learn English? You know, you're from southern Brazil, and here we are in Peru speaking on an English podcast.
Yeah, you know, that's that's crazy. You know, well, I have to say that I learned English back in 2013 when I received a scholarship from the Brazilian government through the Science Without Borders program, mm-hmm. and through that I went to study in Budapest, Hungary. Even though the first language in Hungary is Hungarian. I had really good English lessons with Hungarian teachers and Europeans in general, and I ended up somehow learning English like many other Brazilians, and some of whom are still, I have to say that, they are still active in the Science Without Borders web community. And what is really cool to me is that this program has had such a positive impact that many of us are still involved in the community, helping others to have the same opportunity as all of us, and, you know, trying to make all of us to speak English. So, no, that's crazy, but that's the way.
That's the way of the world right now, isn't it? That's really cool. I think that's one of the things I'm excited about to talk today, is that mate itself is sort of this emblem of globalization in one way, and that different cultures coming together and how they mix in unique ways. And so I thought we could kick things off by you know, telling us a bit about who originally drank mate.
Yeah, well, originally, who drank mate were the indigenous tribes from South America. But I have to tell you that I prefer I like to say the gauchos. I mean, in a short way, I have to say, now I have to explain the gauchos, you know. Yeah. It's not fair. in short, we may say that the gaucho culture is the result of a mix between different ethnic groups who inhabited the pampas, mm-hmm. or grassland or local landscape. Mm-hmm. And the first ethnic group are, of course, the indigenous populations who first lived there, and later on the Europeans who ended up in, I would say, in this southernmost part of Brazil and in South America itself to colonize it. And some years later, people of African descent came from other regions of the Brazil colony and got together with the Europeans and the local indigenous to give birth to the gauchos, who still inhabit our lands. Mm. So back then, around, let me say, 1680, life in the fields is characterized by grazing cattle and a nomadic lifestyle around the borders of southern Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, more or less with a life based on the livestock. Later on, of course, with the establishment of the livestock farms, huge extensions of land were the farms and the first cities. Mm-hmm. The farms were the first cities in the region. Mm. With these guys, the gauchos. So the mixture of the indigenous, the Portuguese, the Spaniards, and the African descents, these are the first guys who drank mate. Wow. And of course, with lots of traces from the Guarani and the Charrua tribes, who had always drank mate. And you know, the Jesuits, missionaries, they spread the popularity of drinking mate.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really interesting story. It's one of the things that when we dive into to think about mate and sort of the cultural story of it, really how much of this history, you know, is not known to the rest of the world, but it's such a fascinating connection between, as you said, Europeans, indigenous tribes, Africans, and really the whole world on one level. There's a little microcosm of different groups coming together. What's interesting, too, is that today, in these countries, as you mentioned, Brazil, in Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, mate has really become this national identity or part of national identity. And that to be any one of these citizens, which is incredible, in four countries, is to drink mate, is to be a citizen, is to drink mate. Yeah. What's interesting is that I looked up this piece, it was by a revista in Harvard University in the United States, about the many meanings of yerba mate. And one of the respondents within this article, his name is Gustavo Fischmann, and he pointed out that because yerba mate on some level has been nationalized, very few people make this direct connection that really we're drinking something with indigenous roots. And when I read this, it got me really thinking, and as you shared your story too, that even the gauchos, and this there's this connection, there's this mixture between indigeneity, between traveling, you know, colonial missionaries, and then just local cultures in this really interesting mix. And so as we dive into this, we see that when we even say the word mate, what are we talking about, right? And when you and I say mate, it actually comes from, it's a Quechua word. And Quechua is in the linguistic family of Quechua, where we're working in southern Peru these days. And Quechua is spoken here, along with another language called Aymara. And then the linguistic family of Quechua and Quechua spreads up into Ecuador, into parts of Colombia, into Chile, over into Argentina, and parts of Brazil, too. So it really is this large linguistic family. But so we're saying Quechua or mate, which is interesting, and that's sort of what the Jesuit priests picked up on and ended up calling it. And mate is just this Quechua for plant shell. It's describing the shell of a plant, in essence. In Guarani, the group you mentioned, too, it was called Ka'a, and that just means plant in general. And so it's interesting to think even in terms of linguistically where we see the idea of what mate is. Now, as you said, too, we know that mate was probably first cultivated by the Guarani Indians. And so with that, we know that it was drank for mystical rituals. It was used as a welcoming drink, which is interesting because that's one of the hallmarks that we still see today. I mean, that is one of the main things that we'll dive into that we see that mate is about. As well as they drank it for energizing properties. And as we know, and if anybody has tried mate or drank it before, you'll know too that it has really nice energizing properties. It has some caffeine and some other antioxidants to boost your energy levels. Now, mate is such an important part to Guarani culture that they have a legend for about where it came from, which I think is really cool, and I want to take a minute to share it with you. And so it's said in this legend that one day an old nomad man was too weak to keep following his tribe. So he decided to take a rest. He said, "Me and my daughter, we'll take a rest here and let the tribe continue on." But they soon ran out of food. And so one night, the stranger visited them and asked for food and for shelter. So the old father and his daughter generously gave away whatever they had. They had just a little bit left. They gave what they had to the stranger. Now, he was surprised by such hospitality. This visitor, who was actually Tupa, the Guarani supreme god, which is always awesome to be visited by the supreme god, he was surprised by their hospitality, so he offered them a plant that he created to make the special kind of tea, you know, so that they would never be thirsty and they'd always remain healthy. This is where we got mate, it said. And so he also told them to share this beverage with others from the tribe. And so in this way, we can see that mate has become synonymous with the idea of sharing with health amongst friends, and notions of endurance, too, that we can carry on and be healthy, which that's nice legend, I think. And then, as you pointed out to Gil, which is helpful to think, is that then the habit of drinking mate itself spread throughout South America, first by Jesuit missionaries. They're the ones that picked up on it and then started bringing it to other missions, to other churches, and then later on by cowboys, notice the gauchos, right?
Yeah.
Oh, gaucho.
Gaucho.
I'm trying to say it correctly. Kind of moving with that, what's really interesting to me, too, in this story is that, you know, we have this, I think, this great Guarani legend of where mate came from, and then why we see the Jesuits spreading it. And so what's interesting is that there's this research from a Brazilian anthropologist who I'm going to, you know, say his name poorly because I can't speak Portuguese, but he's Beratti Finocate, I think, something like that. But he has conducted research amongst the Guarani. And so drawing on this research, there's an author named Richard Kane, who made this really interesting argument that we actually see the prototypes for institutions like communism and capitalism developed in the relationship between Jesuits and the Guarani through the mixing of creating plantations for production of mate, really through indentured servitude. And it's this, you know, it's the similar story that we do see in a lot of colonial stories, which is sad that, you know, the missionaries came over, the colonialists came over to different parts of North and South America and put the indigenous people to indentured servitude or slavery, usually in terrible conditions. So what we're seeing with this is the idea that this was the first time that we saw creation of the plantations of yerba mate in this case, and they're called yerbales. And these basically just are, you know, giant plantations in which they were, you know, created these massive extensions of mate. Interestingly, because, you know, you pointed out before the idea that the gauchos also today work on massive plantations also. And so these in some ways might be connected, you know, in a legacy of large extension farming in southern Brazil in this case. What's really interesting, though, is that what happened on these plantations, specifically on yerba mate plantation amongst the Guaranis and Jesuits, was where the first surplus of yerba mate was produced. But it was done in a way that the communities themselves were built around the socialist communist tradition of Karl Marx. As well as there was a Jesuit superior, his name was Superior General Father Bex. It's a pretty solid name, Superior General Father. It's a nice honorific. But so he was trying to create this sort of utopian idea of the communist society, and he did it, interestingly, in this way that was through yerba mate plantations with indentured servitude, which doesn't, to me, sound terribly communist, but an interesting experiment in history in this case. But what's interesting is that so yerba mate ties us, on some levels, it seems, into this idea that if we trace this production of yerba mate, we can see where it was tried to originally used for international commerce to be sold in Europe and other places. It was used for industry. It was used in cases of war also. So what really strikes me here is that basically if we trace the production of mate in this case to its roots, we also see in some level the roots of capitalism, the roots of communism, which we don't often, you know, think about together. And we see globalization, right? We see these many cultural traditions springing from this. And so, to me, it's really a striking story, no?
Yeah, the Jesuits in South America, they had the missões in my region in Portuguese, missiones in Spanish,
and the missions in English.
Missions, yeah. So they had a very complex system of capitalism and also, you know, I would say socialism.
Yeah.
They were suspicious of trying to have an independent empire in the region. That's why they suffered like lots of battles, wars, and they tried to, you know, to make them vanish. So that is very interesting. But as we can see here, we had, as you probably have mentioned, actually, we have this drink, which is a drink beyond the drink, you know, which is a drink beyond the borders. I first said Uruguay, Paraguay, Argentina, Southern Brazil, but, you know, this is South America. So we have many words. We have mate, caa, chimarrão, you know, we have many different words. So as I just mentioned, chimarrão is the Portuguese version of mate.
Chimarrão.
Yeah, it's a hard word. And many guys, for example, I would say, now I have to apologize for my French, but Saint-Exupéry, he's a guy. He has been in Rio Grande do Sul. He's been in South America in general, Southern Brazil, and he wrote his impressions about the gauchos, the culture of mate, the livestock culture, and everything. He had a very, very good impression about the complex system that we had in the time back then. And when we talk about the missions, the missões, there's an author from Rio Grande do Sul who wrote a book called O Tempo e o Vento, which translated to English would be The Time and the Wind.
It's a cool title.
And it's a very cool title. So this guy, he describes the whole complex relationship between the Guarani, the tribes with the Jesuits. So at the time, he writes about the family all along the centuries who had survived in Rio Grande do Sul and made his own empire and this kind of thing. And he writes a lot in the first version of the Tempo e o Vento, Time in the Wind. He writes a lot about the Spaniards and the Jesuits and the indigenous tribes, which is really interesting. I don't want to spoil the book here, so I hope you and our listeners will read that. So the name is The Time and the Wind. But when we talk about the mate culture itself, it reminds me the contemporary gaucho mate, through the music, the poetry, the arts itself. I would say some very important writers and poets have always talked about mate. People not very well known, like Aureliano Figueiredo Pinto, João da Cunha Vargas, José Hernández, these guys with their poems and writings, they had a whole mate literature, which is the Bible of, you know, of the gauchos. This is great. They are great. And, of course, some other poets and musicians like Jaime Caetano Brown from Rio Grande do Sul, Brazil, and José Larralde from Argentina, they sang through their pajadas and their songs a lot about mate as well. So these guys, they let our minds fly through this beautiful mate and gaucho lifestyle, you know. So as we already mentioned, this is the drink beyond the drink, you know. This is a lifestyle without borders, you know.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, one thing that really strikes me about that, as you're saying, is that we see artists, we have, I mean, there's paintings too, right? People have painting depictions, there's poetry, there's music. I mean, there's an entire, as you said, lifestyle. There's an entire, you know, artistic, cultural tradition, many of them, really, built around mate, you know? And so, I mean, I'm thinking here, it's like, what is it about mate, as you said, this drink beyond the drink, right? What is it about mate that does this, that like allows so many different forms of expression, that calls to so many people in so many forms of expression? I mean, to you, like, what is it about mate to you?
Yeah, you know, I think, and I think that we think in my region, the materos around the world, that the customs and the ritual of drinking mate makes it really special, you know. For example, the customs and ritual of drinking the chimarrão mate, they're very complex and also quite simple because it has its own logic, you know.
Yeah.
So it is a social drink, as we mentioned. And there are strict rules which must be obeyed, and when you're drinking with the others, with your friends, your relatives, it doesn't matter. So, for example, the host, the person who is offering the drink, the mate, this guy, he must be the first person to pour hot water over the tea in the gourd. And he's also the first person to drink. And you should see that this is very altruistic, you know? as the first infusion is the strongest one. That's very bitter, you know. So he's trying to be cool with you drinking.
A nice guy thing.
You know, yeah, nice guy. So he has the same, the first sip because he's altruistic. He wants the best for you. So when he or she has drank all the chimarrão, all the mate, he must refill the cuya, I mean the gourd, with water, hot water from the thermos. And he should pass the drink to the next person. So I would say that usually people are served in order of importance, both socially or economically, you know. That's really interesting, as you can see.
Yeah, it is. There's an ethic of sharing, but there's also a sense of hierarchy, right, of power there. It's really interesting. That makes me think of there's a professor at Arizona State University in the United States named David William Foster. And he's been working in Argentina for 50 years. And one of the things he says when he's talking about Argentinian culture, Argentine culture, is one of the singular characteristics that we see is the omnipresence of mate, that it's everywhere, that every person is drinking mate. He says no matter how high you go on the social scale, no matter how high you go on the intelligentsia scale, the intelligent people, the people in the know, everybody is drinking mate, this indigenous drink. And there's something, you know, and this is one of the things that really, you know, gets me thinking about mate in this case, is that we're talking both about, you know, your own region, the Gaucho region in southern Brazil. We see this in Argentina, we see it in Uruguay, Paraguay, and again, as we're saying, we're seeing it spread in other parts of the world too. But this omnipresence of this drink is really interesting, and there is this order, as you said, right? It's based around this you know, ethic of sharing in a certain way. And what's really cool is that mate seems to have this capacity to transcend these kinds of borders, right? Coming back to the Harvard Revista article I mentioned a bit ago, another person that was interviewed about mate in there, her name is Milagros Zingoni, who's from Argentina. She's pointing out the idea that mate is socially inclusive. It transcends almost every barrier, is the hope, of course, right? She says that it can transcend social and racial, economic, gender, even sexual orientation. You know, of course, that's somewhat, you know, utopian in thinking, but I think it's a really fascinating, strong idea. And Milagros gave this really wonderful example of how she sees or has seen mate transcend borders that normally, you know, the social borders that get put up for different reasons. She says that when she was a child, and HIV was becoming an issue in the late 70s, early 80s in Argentina, a couple of doctors would purposefully share their mate with HIV-positive patients in order to encourage Argentines not to be afraid of people with HIV. That, to me, is such a powerful story, such a really powerful way of saying that mate has a capacity. It's a drink, it's a social custom, it has these rules of etiquette, but then also it's used in this way to break down other social barriers. In this case, you know, seeing people with HIV as untouchable or as dangerous or whatever. And to me, that really spoke to me, that to see this form of storytelling. A second one I wanted to kind of point out is that this is more contemporary. Is that this is between the Vatican and Argentina, but you know, Pope Francis is the first pope from yeah. South America.
And he drinks mate.
And he drinks mate. And this is a really, really cool thing. I mean, it's fun if you go to Google or Yahoo or whatever and search online, you type Pope Francis and mate, and you see photos of him drinking mate. What's really interesting is that by papal mandate, which is a law, a rule, you know, by the Catholic Church, is that they call it Vatican protocol. The rules of the Vatican is that the Pope is not allowed, he's forbidden from eating or drinking, showing himself consuming anything in public beside the Eucharist. And the Eucharist in the Catholic tradition is where you take the bread and the wine, and that has been transformed into the body of Christ, it's said. But Pope Francis has said, or he sort of transcended this papal mandate because he chose to have mate with Argentine President Cristina Kirchner. And to me, totally fascinating, and in public too. So they had lunch together, and then he said, oh, we will share mate. And so, to me, I mean, we can see even from the Catholic papal level to the idea of doctors sharing, you know, across borders is really a fascinating, fascinating way that we see mate, you know, changing borders, right, or just transcending them, right? That there are social customs, but even in the case of the Pope, we're seeing religious borders transcending, right? It's really something.
Yeah, you know, as we can see, the Pope Francis is not the only odd guy here, you know. We are not.
No.
Pope is also the odd guy here. And I should tell you that since I stand on my own 2 feet, I spot mate everywhere in my region, you know.
Yeah.
Both in the countryside or cosmopolitan cities from my region.
Yeah.
The Porto Alegre capital is full of materos, people who drink mate. They're always sipping from their gourds.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a joke that people tell that we, the gauchos, we were born with only one arm because the other one is always holding our mate. You know? So, you know, and the mate time for us has always been the sacred time. So you can be the richest guy in town or not. Oh, you will have your mate kit, you know? You will always have your mate. You are the president, as we had Getúlio Vargas. He had his mate.
Also, wow.
You know, crazy dudes with their mate. So, and you will always share. You know, that's the point. We have to share. And when we talk about the mate kit, like the items, you know, as you can see, it's pretty simple. That's the gourd, or as we call it in Portuguese, the cuia. And it's made out of a kind of squash. There's this metal straw. The indigenous, the Guaranis, and the others, the Kaingang as well, they sip in the past they drank through the bamboo
stick,
and you can also find that in, you know, mate places. And the tea itself, you know, which is made out of the Ilex paraguariensis tree. It's more or less the branches and the leaves.
The leaves, and that's it. Huh?
And that's it, you know. That's, as you can see, it's very natural.
Yeah. That's one of the things. We will we'll be putting pictures on, you know, along with the podcast, so you can look at, because I know we're some of you, if you've never seen this, it's really interesting. Again, literally, you take a gourd or a squash, hollow it out, and you cut off the top. You hollow it out. You know, cure it in the sun, dry it, scrape out the insides, and then that, like, literally a gourd is the cup that you drink the mate, and then they make this metal straw that is called a bombillo?
Bombilla.
A bombilla. A metal straw that has a filter on the bottom that you put in the mate itself, and then helps filter the, you know, keeps the tea from coming straight up the straw. But a really interesting, you know, in many ways organic, you know, cup itself. So it's a really fun, interesting thing, way to drink, right? And so again, we're hoping to do a little video of us showing you how to make mate, because there is a very specific way too of how you put the mate in the gourd, how you pour the water. It's really been fun to learn this.
Yeah, can you share with us your? I don't know if you have some notes about the plant itself, the Ilex paraguariensis.
Sure.
Can you share it with us?
Yeah,
I think it might be interesting for, you know, our listeners to understand how organic and natural it is, you know.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, so it is called, you can say it better than I can, the Ilex paraguariensis is the
perfect.
Scientific name of the plant. It's actually in the holly family, and so, you know, folks in the U.S. that have ever put a holiday wreath on their door, it's the same kind of plant, more or less. Actually, in coca that grows in the Andes is also in the holly family. So there's an interesting connection between the coca leaf and the mate plant. But they have these nice, big, broad, green leaves. So this mate itself, or this Ilex, is native to South America. I mean, it comes from Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, southern Brazil, and a bit of Chile, too. So that's, again, the region that we're talking about. So it's interesting that mate is, you know, when you look at the culture itself, and we're talking about the Jesuits, the Guarani, again, we're in the mate region. Like, this is, there's a reason, there's a connection there. You know, when people ask about mate, they say, doesn't, you know, I've had people say, does it have more caffeine than coffee? Does it have caffeine? You know, what does it do? It does have caffeine. Which is interesting because for some people, they actually call it matine versus caffeine. It's same kind of thing, you know, but
yeah.
I suppose it's somewhat chemically different, so it has also been called matane. But just to give some numbers, that it does have caffeine. It can have between 0.7 to 1.7% of caffeine, and this is compared to tea, which can have 0.3 to 0.9, so it can have tea. You know, tea often has less caffeine than mate, but coffee can have up to 3.2% caffeine, so... So yerba mate, in this case, yerba mate, no, is in between, you know, your regular green tea, your black tea, and coffee in terms of caffeine. But it's got a bunch of other really good stuff. I mean, we don't need to go on the list of vitamins, but it's got a bunch of vitamin Bs in it, and it has other really strong antioxidants, too. So it's really good anti-carcinogenic, anti-cancer factors. What I find really interesting about it, because coffee, if you've ever drunken it, which you likely have, can, you know, give you the jitters if you drink a lot of coffee. You know, it makes your hands shake and you can feel your heart pounding. Mate doesn't really do that, and that's because it has a less caffeine, but on top of that, it has other sort of chemical compounds. One is called, you know, theobromine, and one's called theophylline, and both of these are actually really good for relaxing you. So mate both wakes you up and relaxes you at the same time. So it's this wonderful drink that, you know, you don't get jitters, but you feel energized and more awake. It's really actually good for the heart, it said. I mean, I'm not a doctor, so you can't take me to the bank. But I said, and just, I mean, flavor-wise, if you've never had it, it just has a strong, pungent, really earthy taste. It's kind of bitter. It can have a grassy flavor. But it's got hints of herbal and tobacco flavors. Depends on, you know, what you want. It has tannins, too, which adds to the bitterness. And tannins, if you don't know, is the same kind of chemical in the skins of grapes when you make wine. So yerba mate has this interesting mix of things that are in coffee, that are in holly leaves, that are in coca leaves, and that are in wine. But it's, you know, it's its own unique drink, so it's a really interesting thing. As well as it has content of saponin, which I've mentioned saponin before actually on our quinoa episode, you know, about a year ago, which we're hoping to do some more quinoa follow-up. But saponin, too, is a really good antioxidant. It's a really interesting physical plant itself, you know. Okay, so I've gone on a lot about the physical plant, but, I mean, the idea here is that we have a nice, or, you know, we've started to sketch a picture of the history, the cultural, nutritional, social aspects of mate. So clearly, what we're kind of building here, we're seeing that there is something like a culture or cultures of mate out there, right? And all of them, this idea of community, the idea of sharing, of social inclusion are paramount. They're fundamental to what we see in the story of mate. And now, Gil, I know you're the head of the Circle of Drink in Brazil, right? And so I want to talk about what it means to have a community of mate drinkers. You know, when we just talked about the ritual of mate drinking, we talk about passing it among friends, those who are drinking together. And actually, you and I are sharing some mate as we record the show. But now we're also talking about a global community. You know, what is that to you?
Yeah, you know, that is a very, very, very impressive community, I'll say. Well, as you said, we have this global community of Mateiros, so-called Mateiros. We call ourselves Mateiros.
It's a great title.
Yeah, and I'll dare to say that we represent the evolution of our ancestors' rituals of getting together to share our cuyas, our gourds of mate. Well, in the past, this had been only, it has been only exclusive to South Americans, you know? But As we know, the world evolves, and we have this tradition that has evolved as well, the mate tradition. Now, in this, I would say, this globalized world of Facebook, Wi-Fi, television, and too much information, I'll tell you that mate is a good way to unplug. To unplug from all these things, you know. I love, there is this poem in Portuguese which says, mate is the opposite of television, you know. Because when you are when you are alone, it makes you think. And when you are with someone, it makes you talk. So mate brings you back to earth, you know, to the social, real world. Your family, you know, your relatives, your beloved.
To a podcast.
To Peru, to new friends. Yeah. And this guy, as I said before, Dave Mate, he had experienced it all here in South America. And he went back to the U.S. and created this virtual circle of drink and also the online store to give people access to this mate culture, to give them the opportunity to share with all of us through the circleofdrink.com. And as I said, now we have a very active web of mateiros from all around the world. And by the way, you guys who are listening to us now are all invited to join us in our Circle of Drink community. Just look for it on Facebook.
Yeah. I just joined the other day, actually.
Yeah. So, as we say, welcome to the circle. Yeah. And I don't know, I'll have to tell you that the habit of drinking mate was spread throughout South America, first by Jesuit missionaries, and later by the cowboys known as gauchos. Yeah. And nowadays, it has been spread by us, you know, like ourselves. We, average people, ordinary people. And as you guys can see, it's not just a beverage. It's a social and cultural unifier and identifier that cross national and linguistic boundaries just to create the culture of mate, the culture of drink beyond the drink, which brings us all of us together. So I mean, that's massive for me, and yeah, that's massive for most of the people I know, you know? So I have to tell you, thanks, Adam, for everybody for listening, and I hope you liked my impressions and my little bit of knowledge.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it was really, really wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing the conversation with me today. And I want to say, we've mentioned a lot of, you know, depending on what language you speak, a lot of foreign words, a lot of different artists, poets, authors. We're going to put all this information in the liner notes so you can check them out at your own time. Check out the articles, check out some of the paintings. We'll be doing some pictures as well as I mentioned, we're going to be making a little video of how you prepare mate, just to give us a little extra sense of what's going on here. But again, my guest today has been Guilherme Haydn. He's an agricultural engineering student from southern Brazil. He's a mate enthusiast and expert. And so thank you so much for sharing your experiences and your wisdom with us today. I think we're going to go finish our mate.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah. So this is Adam Gamble signing off for this Anthropological Life. Thanks for listening, and hope to see you next time from Peru.